Tony, taloha ni, talofa lava, mahalo le soifu, malelangi e mama, kia orana, mahalo elelei, fakalofa lahiatu, talofa, koko mele mele puka, meo, mai te ama, e momo lava pihikia pe te tato tamana i talangi mo tana tauhina, mana haka manu yanga, mo ki tato uma. Mo te ola ma te mahalohe ku maue ki tato, toka tino in tato tamohaina benei. Ia. Once again, warm Pacific greetings to all our listeners. You are tuned in and listening to Te Ama Radio on Planet FM 104.6 or live streaming online at www.planetaudio.org.nz. Or if you missed the broadcast, listen for the next 7 days at www.planetaudio.org.nz/Te Ama Pacifica Health. Better yet, you can download our weekly shows on the Planet FM website. Te Ama are proud to partner up with Waitemata District Health Board and Isamaki Healthcare to promote health and welfare amongst our Pacific population in Aotearoa, New Zealand, so that we may have the tools and knowledge to make better lifestyle choices. Our sponsors, Waitemata District Health Board, is the largest New Zealand DHB in New Zealand, which protects, improves and promotes the health of our people and communities. And our other sponsor, East Tamaki Healthcare, is one of the largest primary healthcare providers in the country, and East Tamaki Healthcare have been serving South Auckland communities for 40 years. Mahalo ni mahanga he tai lahi lele ki te Waitemata District Health Board. Ea ma East Tamaki Healthcare, mo te ngā lue mahalohi ma te tautua mo a tātou kāinga pahe huka. On Te Ama Radio, we promote health and well-being and raise awareness about the community services available throughout our communities. Te Ama are proud to promote health and welfare for Pacifica families right here in New Zealand. At Te Ama, we actively encourage and invite guests who are working in public health or making a difference in their communities, whether it be in education, employment, sports, religion, social justice and so forth. This radio show is for our Pacifica people and for those who are serving our Pacifica population to improve health and welfare outcomes. We have been blessed to have had some amazing and passionate guests share about themselves, their passions and work, and also the difference they are making to promote and enhance the quality of services for our Pacific people and their families right here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Maloni, Te Ama.
Te awa ko te moana i te wā hoakaho toke lau i a mōlalo tonga me Aotearoa te moana no hoakaho toke lau me pakuranga āhau ko puka toku whānau ko mele mele toku ingoa. Tēnā koe, Dr. Will, how are you?
Talofa Mao, how you doing?
Good, thank you, Dr. Will. Thank you so much for taking the time and making the effort to be here.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, kia ora and warm Pacific greetings all. Welcome to the Ama House. So, just prepared me a little intro here. You know, I love having the opportunity provided here by Planet FM to discuss, share, explore and encourage ways of ultimately uplifting our people to strive towards being the best versions of themselves. Ourselves, having a safe space with the right, trained, qualified and experienced people in their chosen field to have that conversation and lean into that unknown discomfort. So today, I'm excited to have Dr. William Cunningham, cataract and retinal surgeon. Mālo, Dr. Will.
Mālo, Mel.
I think before we get into these questions, I've been really interested in Dr. Will and ask you, how was your weekend?
Yeah, I had a very good weekend. Yeah, work-wise, we did a quick trip to Wellington just to present to some optometrists down there around some eye stuff, and the rest of the weekend was spent with the family. Yeah,
it was good. My man, thanks, Dr. Bill. So down in Wellie was just for the workforce, just for staff, peers, not for the public?
It was just for staff, yeah. Yep.
Okay. Awesome. And one more question, Dr. Will. What's your take on the All Blacks losing two games to the Aussies and Argentina?
I think the next one will come back. We'll be right.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to get straight into it, Dr. Will. A lot is known about obesity, healthy heart, and diabetes. Diabetes amongst our PI people and Māori as well, Dr. Will. Little known about eye care. What are the concerns and how do we prevent eye diseases? Will, if you can elaborate, please.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it a little bit before. I suppose, you know, the most obvious thing at the moment is the, you know, the diabetes and obesity epidemic. And we've talked how diabetes can affect your eyes with, say, cataract and the retina at the back of the eye. But rather than focus on that today, I thought we could just talk a bit more broadly around how we can care for our eyes in general, and I thought we could run through the different age groups as well, just to give everyone an idea about what they can do to look after their eyes a bit better. Yeah.
That's great. That's awesome, Will. Dr. Will. Okay. Can you share with us, please?
So let's start with, say, newborns. So
yes.
Let's say you have your child, and obviously you should have had some screening during pregnancy. Baby comes out, and part of the check as a newborn is to check the baby's eyes. And what you should be having there is somebody shining a light into the baby's eyes to check their red reflex. And that's that funny red glow you see in photographs, more so yes. In older photos. And what we're looking for there is to check that there's a nice equal reflection back in each eye. And that's a sign that there's nothing blocking the vision. If, say, one eye doesn't reflect the light back as well, then that baby should be referred on to see an eye surgeon for further assessment. So let's say you're unsure if your child's had this, you should definitely check with your GP or your whoever's, say your Plunkett nurse, whoever's helping look after your baby. And another thing is if, let's say, you take a photograph of your baby and the red reflex doesn't look equal. That's probably another reason to just take your baby along to the doctor and just double check that that's a normal thing.
Okay.
Yep.
And leading on from that very first eye exam for the newborns.
Yep.
And you've covered that. When is the next stage?
Well, the other thing I should say is that with all of these stages, the key is obviously, you know, living as healthy a lifestyle as possible. But also, a lot of these things go undetected unless you're screened. So you've got to be proactive with your eye care and screening. In terms of kids, there should be regular screening arranged. So the next screen for kids would be usually the preschool screen. So that's a vision check for kids prior to starting school.
Okay. And what does this test encompass? The screening test.
It's a very simple test of vision, basically. And again, there are a certain standards that should be met. And let's say a child doesn't see well from one or both eyes, then again, they should be referred on for assessment.
Okay. And also, let's say a newborn wasn't screened, you know, at that age. Yep. Can it be picked up at that preschool age?
It can be, yeah. But some things, you know, you want to get onto sooner rather than later. So if you're unsure if if you've been screened or not, or if you're certain you haven't, then you should be, because there are a few things that could potentially damage the vision quite quickly.
If it's not picked up.
Yeah.
Quickly, okay, I see. So the earlier it's picked up,
yeah. Generally, with all these things, the sooner you pick them up, the better. Yep.
Okay. And share with me, Will, can the GP pick up, conduct these tests?
They're very simple tests. So with the young ones, you know, the red reflex, all GPs will have a handheld torch to check for that. And the same with the vision check for the, you know, preschoolers. Yep.
Okay, and you were saying before it's important to be proactive. So these tests aren't offered as part of the child wellbeing?
Right? They are, and they should be. But occasionally kids fall through the cracks. You know, particularly maybe with some of our Pacific Island babies, they may not have had those checks, or if they've been between countries, etc.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you, Dr. Wall. What are some healthy tips we can use? Some healthy eye exercises, or, you know what I'm saying, for we us as parents can look out for or provide for our newborns up to the preschool stage?
Yep. So, again, that general stuff, just, you know, healthy diet,
yes.
Healthy lifestyle, encouraging your kids to go outdoors. There's good evidence to say that spending time outdoors is good for your vision.
Yes.
And certainly too much screen time can be bad for kids. And the main issue there is it can encourage nearsightedness or short-sightedness. So that's where you can see very well up close, but not so well in the distance. And, yeah, there's basically a myopia or a nearsightedness epidemic at the moment. And I think we think that, you know, screens have a big part to play in that. So send your kids outside, yeah.
That's it. And do you have a recommended time frame the kids can stare at their tablets or mobile phones, TVs?
I think, you know, it depends what they're doing it for. There's obviously some benefits with the screens. So say if it's for education, things like that. But I don't think there's a specific time limit. But, you know, I think anything beyond sort of 30 minutes is probably a bit too much.
Send them out, eh?
Yeah.
If it's not raining.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dr. Boyle. Okay, so leaning on from preschool age, when is the next stage?
Well, then, yeah, during primary school, you're going to, there should be some more scheduled checks. Again, that's just for your general vision. But once the kids get a bit older, they may self-report issues, and it can be a little confusing sometimes figuring out if it's a genuine complaint or whether, you know, they're doing it for maybe to get off school or whatever. But the key there is the parents will know their kids best, and I think trust your gut, and if you think something's wrong, get it checked. You might, let's say, see your child squinting, say if they're reading or if they're trying to see something in the distance. Again, trust your gut, and if you think they're struggling, take them along and have their eyes checked. Yep.
Yeah, I want to focus a little bit on that, Dr. Will. Could there be another reason why kids, you know, when they're squinting, or could there be another underlying reason why they refuse, they don't want to get their eyes checked, you think?
Yep. It depends on the age as well. So I suppose teenagers, not so much these days, but certainly in my days, you know, wearing glasses wasn't very cool. So, yeah, that might be a reason why. Or, you know, there are many reasons why, you know, a child might not want to report their eye troubles. You know, it all comes down to their previous experience. They might have had a bad experience with a doctor in the past, or, you know, there could be many things putting them off perhaps telling you the truth. But again, it comes down to the parents and, yeah, trusting your instincts.
And also there's an alternative to wearing glasses, correct?
Yep, so once you're getting into the teenage years, a lot of what we do is managing more refractive error, so, you know, managing kids in their glasses. These days it's mostly for nearsightedness. And, yeah, there is a treatment available that can help slow the progression of that disease. So let's say you become nearsighted quite early on, say, you know, under 10. Traditionally, that would continue to get worse throughout your teenage years and even into your 20s, to the point where you're legally blind with the condition, so you're so nearsighted that, you know, without your glasses on, you would pass as legally blind. So there are some treatments now to slow that disease process. One option is a dilute eye drop, which is very easy to use in kids, and there's some good evidence there to show that helps. And the other one that you were referring to is orthokeratology, which are basically some contact lenses that you sleep in. They subtly change the shape at the front of your eye, so that when you wake up and take the contact lenses out, you're not so short-sighted, and they can help slow that myopia progression process down. Yep.
Okay, so with that myopia progression,
yep.
People that have that condition, are they not able to fulfill, have the best possible sight? Is it within because of that disease?
Yes, so the myopia is near sightedness, and as I was saying, it would usually progress in your teens and to the point where you become really short sighted. It is correctable, say, with glasses and or with contact lenses, but it's good to try and minimise that progression so that you're not, say, when you're an adult, you're not always needing to use your glasses. Yeah.
That's right. Thank you, Dr. Will. Okay, leading on from teenage into the...
Yep, so as an adult, particularly as a young adult, it's kind of up to the individual. Certainly if you're having issues with your eyes, get them checked. But in terms of screening, you're probably a bit young there to justify any regular screening,
okay.
Say with an optometrist. So at that age, it's more just, as required eye care.
Okay.
Yeah. But, let's say you're a diabetic or you have any other medical issues that could affect your eyes, then... Yeah, you should be having regular eye checks, but as a healthy, say, 19, 20-year-old, I don't think there's any point in screening, really. Yep.
Okay. So what are some tips? You mentioned the healthy lifestyles, healthy eating. Anything else we can do in particular to look after our eyesight in general?
Yeah, they've done big studies looking at, what can affect your eyes. I think it's just common sense, really. So, anything that's going to be good for your body is going to be good for your eyes. If something's hurting your eyes, don't do it. Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you a real example that happened to me. And I know I mentioned it to you a few years ago. And I wasn't even aware that you were an eye surgeon. I was cutting grass. And then something went into my eye.
Mm.
And it was the most painful experience I've had. And the first thing I did, I rubbed the crap out of it, eh? Yeah. That was my first instincts.
Yeah.
It didn't get better. And that night, I was so desperate, like, man, it was so painful.
Yeah.
I went into the water, and I was like diving in the water, in the ocean.
Yeah,
because I was desperate to get rid of that pain. That's what I thought was best.
Yep.
And then when I came to, I got the proper treatment. I was supposed to do the opposite. What should I have done then, Dr. Will?
It's hard to say. Eh? You got to trust your instincts. And let's say something goes in your eye and it doesn't feel that bad, then it's probably something that's going to pass. But if something goes in and the problem persists, say, beyond a day or so, that's more when you should get it checked. Or if it's a really bad injury, so if, say, a big bit of metal's hit your eye or you're worried that there's something more major has happened, then, get it checked. But, stuff goes in people's eyes all the time. I think you probably did the right thing, trying to ride it out, but if after a day it's still bothering you, you should get it checked. But you were overseas at that
time? Yes, I was overseas.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a question here for you while we're talking about overseas. Well, and I apologize if I'm all over the place with my questions. Are there ophthalmology services in the islands that meet the needs required?
Yep. There are, as far as I'm aware, there are eye services across all of the Pacific. Some are permanent, some are just, provided through a visiting service. So, let's say with the Cook Islands, I'm not aware of any permanent ophthalmologist there, but not during COVID, but usually there are regular teams visiting there. In Samoa, there is a local ophthalmologist, Lucilla, and a local optometrist who can care for most things, and I think there's a regular ophthalmologist in Tonga as well, and Fiji as well. There's plenty of eye surgeons there. Yep.
And can they sustain ophthalmic services during the COVID?
Well, even, you know, pre-COVID, what they, you know, they just, they do the best job they can with what they've got. But certainly we've got the advantage here with all the latest tech and equipment and support. So, yeah, we're quite lucky in New Zealand that, you know, we can offer first-class eye treatment. The Pacific is more just, you know, your general care type stuff, but anything advanced would usually come to New Zealand or Australia for care. Yep.
That's right. Thanks, Dr. Will. I think we'll try and continue on from our previous discussion from the teenage, young adult stage in terms of general eye care. Mm.
Yep.
When is the next, let's say, you know, no eye diseases, and generally speaking, the next stage.
Yeah, so if you're healthy and, you know, there's no eye trouble, then it's probably not until you hit your 40s, that's when most people start needing, particularly if you've got good distance vision, so in your 40s, maybe 50s, people will start needing some assistance for their reading. And that's, yeah, if you start to notice that you say, you know, you're struggling with your near vision or holding your phone out further than what you would have in the past, then that's a sign that you're becoming presbyopic, which is just where as we all get older, we struggle more to see up close. And that's probably the time you should see an optometrist. And they will do a general eye check and help you, or guide you in terms of what glasses you can use to help with your near vision.
Okay, so it's natural then in your 40s, 50s to be struggling with your near vision.
Yep.
Okay. And so can you walk me through the process there? Like, right now I'm thinking of real examples, like my father. He's an educated man, but I remember in his late 40s or early 50s, he knows time to talk about he can't read the paper unless he has some glasses. And I think he went straight to like a $2 shop to buy some glasses so he could see better. Can you walk me through the process, the proper process of going about getting the right, correct eye care?
Yep. I suppose it depends. The downside to seeing an optometrist is it costs money. And certainly if you don't have the funds to see an optometrist, then, and you're struggling to see up close, then that's probably a decent option, is to go and try the different, you know, magnifiers on and see what works for you. I suppose the fear there is that, let's say there's something else going on that you know, that could potentially harm your vision and you didn't know about it, then...
That's right.
Yeah, that's that screening opportunity must. And if you'd want a more, you know, refined prescription or the best possible vision with your glasses, then certainly seeing an optometrist is a better option. But... yeah, for many, they don't have the luxury of, you know, being able to pay to see an optometrist.
Are you aware of any other options there to make it more affordable?
Yeah, there are lots of funding things available that can help get you to see an optometrist. I think, you know, you can go through WINS or... you know, if you're part of the AA, then you can get free, you know, eye screening and things like that. There are tons of optometry programs around. Yeah.
To make it more affordable, eh?
More accessible, yeah.
More accessible.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Wall. And I suppose when we all get older, you know, How can we, like, I'm talking about the later stages now, you know, maybe the last, you know, when we retire, what are some tips from your perspective to manage the eyesight?
Yep, so I'd recommend a check every couple of years with an optometrist, just to screen for those things that are more common as we get older, so cataract. And a few common ones are glaucoma and macular degeneration. And some of those things, particularly say, take glaucoma for example, it's called the silent thief of vision. So that's something that can take your vision without you really knowing about it until it's too late. So you'd want to, yeah, I'd strongly recommend eye screening, and again, then just living a healthy lifestyle, yeah.
What is that condition called again?
Glaucoma.
The thief of...
The silent thief of vision, yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So, yeah, these things are more common as we get older. Yeah, good to get it checked.
Absolutely. And do you come across a patient who are just freaking out that, you know, they're probably in their 30s, 40s, freaking out that they can't see something properly and they're not aware of what's going on? Have you come across that a lot?
All the time, yeah. And a lot of the time it's just a simple thing like, you know, their focus is off or, it's rare for bad things to happen to healthy young adults, yeah. Yeah.
Awesome, Dr. Will. Okay, Dr. Will, I've got a question for you. Some diabetics, for whatever reason, and I don't say that lightly because I understand and I'm in a position to fully grasp most of the whys and learn from a clinical and non-clinical perspective, but for some reason, some diabetics, type 1 and 2 and chronic, and at the chronic stage, need support to manage their diet, exercises, and medical requirements. Any advice on how they can help themselves better and how family can also?
It's a tricky one, eh? Because, I'm not a diabetic, and it's very easy for me to sort of sit on this side and say, oh, you should be doing this, this, and this. Whereas the reality of it is, I think for a lot of people, they perhaps might put other things first, for example, their family. And it's trying to get that balance right, you know, caring enough for yourself that you can help your family, but also trying to put your family first. It's a weird mix, and I don't actually have the answer there. Yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one.
Thank you, Dr. Will. Okay. And also, does it worry you how much exposure New Zealand health officials put on coronavirus, yet more of our people, PI and Māori, are severely affected and dying with the lack of exposure, meaningful engagement and education on preventable diseases like diabetes?
Yeah, it does concern me a bit that we've spent a lot of money on coronavirus when, you know, there are plenty of other things affecting our people. And it comes back to those simple things like education, access. I definitely think if corona takes off and, you know, starts to really affect us, then that's a different story. But I think, we shouldn't forget about these other things that are probably more relevant, in my opinion, yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Will. And what you mentioned I can't remember if we were on or off here. On the weekend, you were down in Wally, working workshop amongst your peers. What have you guys got in the
pipeline, or what are you guys working towards to, eliminate health equity, inequity?
So as an eye college, we are currently working on firstly a multi action plan, which aims to address health or improve equity for Māori here in New Zealand, and that will also provide a blueprint for a Pacifica eye care plan, which has a similar aim to improve eye care for our Pacific people. And we're currently in the development sort of stages with that first plan. We're looking to have that ready to go by 2021. And I think there'll be some positive steps forward there, particularly around, trying to improve access and also trying to encourage our people to, get involved, with medicine and eye care, because we can, I'm one of just a handful of Māori and Pacifica, in the eye care field, and we can definitely do with more.
So how are you, or what do you think needs to be done to get more PI and Māoris alongside you, Dr. Will?
Speaking from personal experience, it's all about having those mentors, and people you can relate to and look up to, when you're young or even when you're at university. If you see someone similar to yourself doing something and enjoying it, then I think you're more likely to want to do that. And perhaps, say, with eye surgery, it's traditionally been a very sort of colonial type setup, without many Māori and Pacifica, and maybe that's a reason why not many have come into this field. But the same goes for any job anywhere. I think just those mentors,
absolutely. So you're one of the few that have gone against the grain in terms of the colonial setup.
Maybe, but the reason I got into ophthalmology or eye surgery was I have a colleague who's about 15 years older than me, but when I was at med school, he took me under his wing, and he's got a Māori background, and we, like me, he used to play rugby and stuff like that, and that's how I got into it. And there are probably other ways people are inspired to do things, but that's what worked for me.
Thank you, Dr. Will. Hey, I want to ask you, I really want to ask you for your perspective on this question, because it means a lot to me. Maybe it links in with what we're doing, but also because us here at Te Ama work alongside the Mental Health Foundation and like minds. What do you do, Dr. Will, to the stress levels or even maybe personal, you've had come across some tough times. How do you iron yourself up or strengthen yourself to prepare with those mental difficulties?
Personally, for me, I know what works. So for me, exercise is always a good cure for anything. It's easy to say go and drink away your worries, but that's a slippery slope. Whereas exercise is a good positive way to rid yourself of stress or worry or anxiety. And there's nothing like those good and healthy endorphins to, help you see things in a more positive light. And then what else do I do? I think it's important to switch off. So, yeah, you got to, you know, do whatever you do, work hard to make a living. But when you get home, I think it's important to try and switch off whatever you've been doing in the day and, you know, spend time with your family. And, again, that helps you gain perspective on what's actually important. It's not the work or the money, it's your family. Yeah, those are two things that work for me, yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Wu. Really appreciate the advice. Yeah, so, us here at Te Amo, we've linked up with like minds, you know, finding ways to provide social inclusion for those that, you know, that going through tough times and bounced back. So, yeah, just plugging in there. Like minds. Dr. Will, with your work, is there anything that you're excited about in terms of your profession that you guys will be rolling out or?
Yeah, I there are plenty of things from a sort of cultural or Māori and Pacifica standpoint. I definitely think our people are underrepresented in terms of, you know, the patient population we're seeing. And to firstly confirm that, we're planning a big survey to look at the proportion of patients that we should be seeing that are, say, Māori or Pacifica. From there, I think that might open some pathways in terms of funding and research into why we're not seeing as many people as we should. You know, is it an access thing? Is it an education thing? Is it a funding or you know, money thing? Yeah, I'm quite excited about that.
Awesome, thanks, Dr. Will. So definitely, yeah, that was another question I had. What do we know about the Māori and PI workforce in both optometry and ophthalmology?
Yeah, with the workforce, I think, say, in New Zealand, in terms of eye surgeons, there's around 150 eye surgeons approximately, and I think at the moment we have six who identify as Māori or Pacifica. I think the optometry workforce is very similar. I think they maybe only have one or two a year out of quite a big group that are Māori or Pacific. So, yeah, we could definitely do with more. And, you know, with medical school, there are
scholarships,
and there's a quota or, you know, a mission scheme for both Otago and Auckland University, which basically makes it more accessible for Māori and Pacific people to do medicine.
Will that be fair, though, on those that don't identify as Māori Pacific? They miss out on their quota. I mean, I'm not familiar with the criteria.
Yeah, look, it's not a perfect system, and there are definite arguments for and against, but I think at the moment, you know, in terms of the medical workforce as a whole, compared to, say, the population, so around a quarter of our population is Māori and Pacifica, if you put the two together.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas if you look at, you know, the doctors or the medical workforce, we're nowhere near a quarter. And until we reach that sort of level, I think there's got to be these schemes that encourage, you know, people into the field. And they might not be perfect, they might not be, some might not view them as fair, but we've got to do something, yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Will. We're heading towards the end now. What are your hopes, Dr. Will? What are your goals for the new year, from a professional perspective?
For the new year, yeah, I'm really keen to get these plans set in place to firstly, this Māori Action Plan to improve eye care equity. That's big on, well, that's at the top of my list professionally. And then hopefully next year, yeah, the borders will open up and I can start visiting the Pacific again because I really enjoy those trips. It's also a good excuse to escape winter here. I'd love that, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Will. Okay, you know, it's been a good show today.
Yeah,
you know, from a more general, overall, you know, perspective.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Good. Hey, any more, we're finishing up. Is there anything else you'd like to cover or bring up?
No, it's hard for me to know what, you know, people want to hear. I suppose if any of our listeners, you know, want to come back with some questions, we'd always, or topics, I'd be very happy to talk about that. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Well, definitely, you're absolutely right. I'll try and get some of my people, aunties, uncles, or patients.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate your time. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I don't mind, though. That's for free. You know what I'm saying?
Can't seem to find a reason to believe that I can break free. But you see, I have been down for so long, like a hope.